calls coming in from La Jolla to Moscow as we discuss the prospects and perhaps the benefits, maybe even the inevitability of anarchy. Does it become lawlessness? Groups of the peaceful, groups of the warlike. Authority is a part of it, is it not? Divinely imposed or inspired or imposed by people. Without authority, there is anarchy. Where there is anarchy, the question is there any progress? I don't know. Your calls and our last hour with John Zerzan in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. John Zerzan, you know, back in the 80s, I was able to meet the Namas, the native inhabitants of what used to be called German Southwest Africa. It's now Namibia, up there by Angola back in the Idi Amin days. And there was this movie called The Gods Must Be Crazy, where somebody, a pilot, threw this Coke bottle out the window and it landed at this little village. And they were like, God, what is this? You know, they have to take it to the edge of the world or something. It's about this little Nama taking this Coke bottle and getting rid of it because it's just causing problems. And it's just a big chaotic movie. It's really funny. But the thing about it is, it's really poignant because this little family was completely undisturbed until this piece of technology just landed with a thud out there in their yard, and it set off this big chaotic adventure for this little guy. And I'm just wondering, does anarchy become lawlessness? And are you willing to submit that there should be no authority, just sort of an every man for himself, and maybe somehow we'll find a collective? I mean, like the way the fish all change direction at the same time, the wildebeests in a stampede will just change direction at the same time. I mean, they're like of a single mind, literally. I mean, do you see this as part of the human landscape, if you will, of the future, where we're actually able to live? I mean, even the collective consciousness is an authority. So whoever started that thought rolling with the wildebeest said, jump left, and they all did. So how is this even possible? How can this concept be realized?
Well, it's not an automatic thing. I grant you that. I just think that community is a project, and that's what anarchy means to me, not just as a distant goal, but as the way we deal with each other now. I mean, that's one of the, speaking of Occupy, by the way, that's perhaps one real plus about that, the horizontalism, the emphasis on equal access and so forth, you know, and the way they conduct things. But I think what is it that prevents community or makes community disappear? It's things that don't have anything to do with anarchy. They are these things that get in the way. They are these things that take the place of community. And we've always been told, well, you have to have these things, or you have, or you'll have chaos and, lack of any kind of. It'll just be horrible. I mean, that's what we're told now. That's what we were told at the beginning of civilization. You know, from the walls of the first cities, and they were, of course, walled cities. You don't go out there in nature. You're lucky you're here with the army and the temple and the priests and everything, because it's very dangerous. And really, it wasn't so dangerous for the longest time, but now we're told that we couldn't possibly survive without all these kinds of management and coercion and 2 million people in prison and all that. I mean, it really isn't working. It just isn't working. There's the proof of the pudding. If it's working, then, you know, why waste time even, you know, criticizing it or whatever? But it's not. It's not healthy, and it's a disaster. It's disorder. It's not the anarchy that's the disorder. I mean, really, look around. I mean, we can see that. It's not a pretty picture.
All right. Hey, feel like taking a call?
Sure.
Let's take one from Alex in Moscow. Alex, come on the bridge of the mothership. Как вы?
Hi. I was just thinking that technology tends to civilize people and bring them together to be more cooperative, like the Indians in Southwest America. The Hopi were more agrarian, and the Navajo were more hunters and more nomadic. Well, when the Hopi were able to start harvesting and cultivating grains like corn, then they were able to have fixed settlements, and then that allowed them to have greater free time to pursue science. And and so that they were less warlike. Also, when people are able to do everything...
Could I tackle that first one first?
Okay.
Just so I don't forget. Well, it's funny that human sacrifice starts with corn in short order. You're making a virtue out of things that I think are not so so pleasant. Or, for example, sedentism. That's one of the problems right up there with domestication. Once you have sedentism, meaning there's no mobility, it's a number of very negative things start. I would just reverse pretty much everything you just said. Domestication in the sense of corn, and we know that corn doesn't even exist without constant attention. It doesn't exist freely in nature. It would disappear. So maybe it's the how much domestication you need, you get to the worst things. I'm not totally sure about that, but you do get human sacrifice in short order after domestication. I think that alone tells you a lot. It was the more nomadic people, the hunter-gatherer people, that were way more egalitarian and didn't rely on all kinds of priesthoods and things like that. I mean, we'd have to get... It would take a while to sort all this out. I mean, there's a lot to it. But, you know, we were supposed to valorize all these things that have come to pass. But on inspection, you know, I just don't think they hold up very well.
Well, I just thought that it gave them more time for astronomy and math and chemistry and things like that.
Well, it gives some people more time, just like it does now. You know, yeah. In fact, it includes me and perhaps you. We have more free time. We're not doing the manual labor. But that's always there at the bottom of things. And just by the way, all of the bonded technology, it rests on the slavery of hundreds of millions of people in the mines. You and I aren't doing that, but somebody is. And so to keep all this lovely stuff going, I don't think it's lovely, by the way, but, you know, let's not forget the toll of all those people that have to be in places like that, and the foundries and the assembly lines and the factories and on and on and on, so we can have the lovely technologies.
Yes, that's true. In the Soviet era gulags, the criminals were the people who were sent to the dangerous jobs and into the mines. So I agree with you there.
Uh-huh.
And my other point was that with increased specialization, if a person is able to do everything for themselves, like a mountain man, then they tend to not want social contact. Anybody that comes into their area, they want to get rid of them. But if I'm, for instance, a dentist or an engineer or a plumber, then I have my specialty and other people need me and I need their specialties. And
well,
so we're all interdependent.
Why are you assuming that they would want to kill somebody who came along? I mean, there's really no basis for that.
All I know is from my country's history that that is the way it typically is.
Oh, well, okay. Well, we'd have to get specific about which group and which time, then. I mean...
Yeah, that's what I was talking about earlier, John, is... Alex, thank you very, very much. Excellent call and some good points. Opened some good doors for us. That's what I'm talking about. If everyone were the same... Something might be feasible, but when you have, that's what I'm getting at, man. Does the technology make it possible to be more aggressive? It's like he's got a rock. Well, I've got a spear. You know, I've got a bow. I got more range than that rock. I mean,
yeah. And Alex put it the positive way, which actually Emil Durkheim came up with. He said more specialization means more unity because people do depend on each other. Which it seems to me an odd way to put it. I mean, that's a solidarity, but it's based on a kind of forced necessity. I mean, you do rely on experts in a given setting, like we do. Of course, we do. But is that a positive situation? I think it would be more the other way around. If everybody's equipped to handle everything, then you have a basis for equality and autonomy. You don't have to have this effective power of other people over you. And they don't always use it for bad ends, I'm not saying that, but you are enthralled to them because they know how to do stuff that you don't. And that's not a basis of equality. You know,
money. What about money? What about the money aspect of things? The whatever the medium of exchange would be. It's like, well, I'm sorry, but this steak is worth more than that bushel of beans, and you're not getting it. I need the potatoes too.
Well, yeah, these are problematic things. I mean, but the more specialized you are, then the more exchange there needs to be. I mean, of course, there was trade among indigenous people, but the further you get away from the condition where people were roughly able to do whatever they needed to do, make the tools or whatever it could be, less division of labor, then there's less need for exchange because you you have to give up a certain amount of things too, I guess, in the process. You know, like, for example, you're not going to have plums from Chile in February in Seattle unless you have an industrial globalized system to get you those plums. Of course, they don't taste like much after they've been, you know, carried to 5,000 miles. But, you know, yeah, you wouldn't have those things in a world without the means to do it. It's just looking at the cost of the means to do it. You know, what's the cost of all that industrial shipping and all the rest of it? Is it worth the price?
Annie in Alabama on wild card line number 3. If you're there, please talk to us, Annie.
Thank you, John.
You're welcome.
I think that the microchip is a globalist trap, and people need to go into business manufacturing analog electrical devices and even a lot of treadle machines that require no electricity, like my sewing machine, because that microchip is just there to trap us. They can aim a device at everything we have and shut everything down that we have, and the manufacturers want the microchips in there so they can use a watchdog timer to shut everything down and make us buy a new one.
Wow, excellent. I love that. Thank you.
You rock, Annie. Thanks.
Retro. Rock.
Silly booze, Annie.
She's cool.
Yeah. Alabama.
Yeah. Alabama. Like that accent, too. You can't buy that.
Oh, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's smooth. Well, so what about that? I mean, look, this is the thing that disturbs me. I just think it's too far down the road almost to even be talking about this. I mean, it's ridiculous. The amount of it, look, it's almost as though, I mean, what if I were to submit to you that things have gotten so free over, I mean, really since the 60s, we're like so free that it almost looks like we're running around killing each other. And so maybe the authorities say, I'm just playing here. I'm not saying I think this, I'm just playing with it. The authorities say, well, you know, this population of ours, they're really a bunch of idiots. I mean, they're running around calling each other names, you know, giving each other the obscene gestures in traffic, road rage. Mm-hmm. They're flipping out and, you know, smacking somebody because their order at the taco stand was wrong. You know, they're abusing kids. They're not taking care of their old people. You know, they steal whenever they can. I mean, of course, there are bright spots that you find in humanity everywhere. All you have to do is look for them, and you'll see. So as somebody said one time, that the measure of a person is how you treat somebody else who really has nothing to offer you at all.
Mm.
So where do you get to that point? We've got this. Now, I want to go back to this massive police state, because it is a massive police state. Between the NDAA and now the FBI saying, oh, turn in your bin Ladens. They don't call them Benjamins anymore, meaning $100 bills for the uninitiated.
Huh.
Turn in your bin Ladens. That's the currency of drug traffickers and terrorists. We need to be electronic here because, well, I think I just mentioned it was, what, $538 billion, I think was the figure that Morgan's talking about, the bad loans added up to now. So, you know, in other words, when people are allowed to play, don't they?
Well, people are under pressure. You know, it's not a normal, healthy life. I mean, you know, you're getting these pathologies of all kinds, and it's frightening.
Well, am I wrong, John, by suggesting that it seems like they get even more bucky when they don't have pressure on them?
Well, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, people are exhausted. People are working so much more. You know, what about the promise of technology? We won't have to work with. It's really just the opposite. We've never been working so much. So people are stressed out. I mean, I think in general, people you know, they behave badly if they're treated badly, and if the conditions of life are so demeaning and give you less meaning. And I mean, then don't get me started about postmodernism, right? It's just the worst cynicism and everything. So, gee, I mean, what do people have to cling to? It's really sad, you know. And so, yeah, you're going to get these weird behaviors. There's no doubt about it. And you know, I'll tell you, when anarchists say, and I'm an anarchist, okay, we don't need cops. Let's get rid of the cops. We can take care of this. We go around and say, well, I agree with that, but you have to get rid of mass society, because you can't do without that, because, you know, it generates all this crazy stuff. And you can't say to somebody, don't ever call the cops, somebody who's vulnerable, and, you know, of course they call the cops. You have to work toward a society where the conditions are such that then cops are irrelevant. There weren't cops in banned society, because it was an organic, you know, straight-up thing where they worked it out. They had to deal with it, and they did.
You know what I find really interesting is that the English cops, the bobbies, did not carry firearms. And this was during the days when, I mean, it was unbelievable. I mean, this is really a recent advent. There the cops are, unarmed, no firearms. And some idiot, this was especially popular in the 70s, the old double-barrel shotgun that sawed off and we're going to rob something. And these unarmed cops would just stay out there, and sometimes they were wounded, and sometimes they were killed, but not often. They'd just walk up and say, now, you know, you must surrender that shotgun and come out. You have to do this. And their success rate was huge. And it's funny, the populace was armed in those days. They could have their pistols and revolvers and their rifles and their shotguns. Mm-hmm. And the cops were unarmed. Now they've taken the cops, the guns away from all the citizens, and the bobbies are carrying MP5s. Now, if that's not incongruous, I don't know what is.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the success rate there? And what I see more and more is the number of unarmed people, mental patients and or whoever, gunned down by the cops. You know, you think with all that armament and all that stuff, they could just go up and take the thing away if there's some real crisis thing like that. No, they just murder people. Hey, man, there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of people that are sick of it.
How do you feel about an arms society? You know, this UN treaty, this arms control treaty, they're trying to pull the United States into it. You know, to me, the United Nations is, I'll just state this, this is my opinion. I think the United Nations is useless. It was supposed to be on a boat and remain at sea all the time. Now it's over there, now it's in New York City. And these people are attempting to make policy. And yet everywhere they are, their forces are, chaos is there with them. I mean, to me, it's just, it's very disturbing.
And the thing about arms here, I mean, I don't want to have a situation where it's only the cops that have guns. I mean, I can tell you that. I'm not, give up all your sustenance and then just rely on the cops. No thanks. I'm not,
okay.
I'm not down with that.
All right, just checking with you. All right, we'll be back with a few more calls. We got old Robert's in La Jolla. Don't hang up. Cali in Michigan, don't hang up. Dan, hold your position. We'll be back. This is Coast to Coast AM. Well, you heard the man. He doesn't agree that it's a good idea that the police only be armed, but it would be a good idea for you to keep up with this. There are a number of news sources to go to. You know, there's always Drudge, but there's way more than that. InfoWars is a good site. Full Spectrum Dominance is a good site. Be sure and put hyphens between Full Spectrum and Spectrum and Dominance. Full-Spectrum-Dominance.com. Blacklisted News, Before It's News, RedIceCreations.com. You can find out about these things. And above all, check the CoastToCoastAM.com website, because there's a lot of interesting stuff on it and you will enjoy it. We will have a couple more calls from you and finish up the hour with our guest tonight, John Zerzan, on Coast to Coast AM. John Zerzan, let me ask you something. Now, you know, when you use the word anarchist, that, at least in my mind, conjures up visions of somebody, you know, just kind of running like a nutcase through the street, pretty much doing what they want to. I'm an anarchist, man. I don't participate. But let's just cut off all of that except the last part, and that is the not participating. Is that the way to bring about a change in consciousness? Is that how You know, they say if you can get 10% to go with the program, the other 90% will follow. Any good propagandist knows that one.
Uh-huh.
So is that what you do to bring about the shift in the paradigm? Do you just withdraw? Do you just try not to participate?
I think that's part of it. For example, voting, that's kind of a cardinal anarchist thing, like based on the thing of realizing that you are reproducing and legitimating the system when you vote. So if you don't want the state, of course you don't vote. That doesn't mean you don't do other things, though. I mean, you've got to be active. You've got to be, you've got to come on with something. And I'm in favor, by the way, of people in the streets. I'm in favor of property damage, because this is just a bunch of talk until people really push it. And I don't consider it violence to, attack a bank or a computer bank or something like that.
Attack and do what? Beat up the bricks or beat up the people who work there?
No. Put it out of commission, if possible. You know, that's really, I think you've got to be focused and not indiscriminate, that's for sure. And you've got to respect life. That's why these outfits like Earth Liberation Front or Animal Liberation Front completely distance themselves from violence against animate life. And I'm with them on that. So it's not just withdrawing, but it's also having the guts to take the struggle forward, or else you don't get anywhere. Vietnam War did not end because there were a bunch of peace parades. It ended because the other side kept fighting and the U.S. combatants stopped taking the field. And
so you're talking Fight Club here.
Well, yeah. I mean, yeah, we've got to be serious. The government checks it out, like they did in Vietnam. Is there going to be some kind of real action here? Or a bunch of parades where people just are completely polite and they don't damage anything? That's no threat. That means nothing.
Damage something, then the cops show up, and they show up in riot gear, and they begin beating the heads, and then they do this enough times that you wind up with a Kent State deal where some people get shot, and then what?
Well, you take the initiative. You kick their ass. If they want that kind of stuff, you got to be ready for that too. Otherwise, you're sheep.
Now see,
you have to defend yourself, and otherwise, it's just to mention one other thing here. Noam Chomsky, and one of his things, in 2003, before the second war against Iraq, there were the biggest demonstrations in world history, and he was exulting in that. And he was even exulting in that now, after the fact that it didn't mean nothing. It didn't stop anything. You can have demonstrations. If they demonstrate the limits of how far you're going to go, which is nothing, then you might as well stay home and watch TV.
So you're saying if you don't want this new world order, you must rise up.
Yes. Yes.
Damn it, man. That's strong, you know?
In an appropriate way, and not in a way that puts people at risk if they don't want to be at risk. That's what Black Bloc means. I mean, that's why people mask up and go and get out there and confront these people. So they can't just get away with everything. There's going to be some problem. Like I said, they had to move the G8 out away from Chicago months before it was to happen because they knew there was going to be some action.
The thing about it is, though, John, they did have the meeting, though. They did move it, and they did have it, and the agenda they decided on moved forward.
That shows people, too. Oh, the only way you can rule this world is with an army around you? Say, that's real democratic, isn't it? It exposes that stuff.
Now, listen, man, I've enjoyed talking with you. I don't want to get cross with you, but I do want to toss something up here now.
Okay.
A while ago, we were talking about people living in peace and harmony and de-technologizing. Wait a minute. Getting rid of their technology, reducing the amount of technology, mm-hmm. and simplifying and so forth. Now we're talking about kicking booty.
Well, I think they go hand in hand. There's a limit. They won't let us go certain, unless there's some blowback, then... I think history shows that. And
all
I'm
right,
not,
let me ask you this then.
I'm
what
in favor of indiscriminate violence. Don't get me wrong. I'm not in favor of that at all.
Well, I'm not trying to get you to say something that might not sound good later. But, wouldn't it be just as effective to just quit doing business with them?
Well, that too. Yeah, whatever's effective. I mean, I hope it's not going to take so much action. But, I think sometimes you can call the tune. Like after the anti-WTO riots way back in 99, 60 Minutes came here to talk to us because they wanted to know why downtown was smashed up. Well, we could tell them. Here's why. Here's why you got to do something. And so we had a chance to say, you know, we wouldn't have had that chance otherwise.
But see, now here in the last segment of our interview, our time together here, you're getting down to it, pal. So there's a new world order, a great big net that's descending upon us. So everybody knows it. Nobody knows what to do. And as I said at the beginning of the program tonight, it's like I don't want to turn into an Occupy Wall Street thing where instead of first it started off as Occupy the Fed, then it turned into Occupy everything. Occupy the neighbor's poodle's doghouse. Well, I mean, there were so many agendas out there. It was unfocused. I mean, and it just all got diluted and went away, you know?
Really? Yeah.
What was the point?
What I'd like to see, quite frankly, is de-occupy. We're on occupied land. Let's reconnect with the indigenous dimension and those values.
Now, how do you do that? Well, that sounds great, but I mean, how do you do it?
I would start by changing the name and having that consciousness, you know, and bring it into the picture.
Well, they're already putting a K instead of the C in America now. Yeah. They were doing that in the 60s.
That's true, man. Hey, may I mention my new book?
Absolutely. I want you to mention your new book. I want you to mention a little bit of what's in it, and I want you to mention your websites.
Oh, thank you, man. Okay. Future Primitive Revisited. You can get it from Feral House or Amazon. And if you want to know a little more about me, including the radio show, my weekly Anarchy Radio here in Eugene, my website is johnzerzan.net. I don't keep it up a lot, but there's some information. Plus, the radio shows are archived there, by the way, if you wanted to sample.
Zerzan.
Yeah.
John Zerzan, J-O-H-N, not J-O-N, J-O-H-N, yes?
Yeah, thank you.
Yes. All right, excellent, yeah. All right, well, how about Callie?
I think that's the punchline here is if we're going to have a future, it's going to have to be somehow primitive. I think that's the conclusion. So we got to work toward that and get back to the better stuff, I think.
So we're going to have to get primitive on the... Never mind. Let's talk to Callie in Michigan, Wild 2. Callie, are you there?
Yep. My clock's 444 right now. But I was wondering if you had seen a movie called Mind Warp.
What is it called?
Mind Warp.
No, I haven't.
Me either.
It's kind of a... older movie, sort of low budget, but it was the part that kind of stuck with me was the people would kind of sit in like these recliner type chairs and they had something they could plug in to the back of their neck and they just kind of be in this virtual world. You know, they didn't really go anywhere physically and then they would get up, they'd be like this goop, they drink it. Some kind of fluid or whatever, and they just would plug into like these chairs. Now they had kind of like, it kind of always reminded me of like the microchip.
What are you wondering if that's where we're headed?
Yeah, you guys were talking about that kind of earlier, about, you know, not really being as productive or whatever.
Yeah, we were. You know, another one, what you described, it reminded me of, well, I think it's a more recent one. WALL-E. You seen that one? It's a Disney movie.
Yeah.
Very. I thought it was outdoing a lot of radical theory, you know, quite frankly. I loved it.
Yeah.
People are just, you know, the consumer stuff has gotten to the point where they're just fat blimps and they're on these sort of space stations or something. And meanwhile, the planet's been destroyed. But there's this nice rebellion at the end. Great.
Hey, I got a question for you. This came from Dr. Funk via email. And the question is outsourcing a natural result of a sophisticated society that starts feeling other people should do certain work and for less? That's not a bad question.
Yeah. Well, there's a division of labor on an international scale or level. Yeah, that certainly is what happens.
Well, I think the question was, is that a result of a society becoming sophisticated?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's supposed to be some kind of natural development too, all these things, you know, that's, we just succumb to the inertia or the inevitability of it all. That's a good question.
All right, then. Let's have another. On Wild 5, is Robert in La Jolla still there? Because if Robert is there...
Yes. John, thank you for taking my call, and I love your show.
Thank you.
Well, thanks. Thanks for calling.
John Zerzan, I never thought I would be speaking to you, and I gave up the TV because of you 20 years ago.
Whoa, you're kidding. Whoa.
Yeah, it was great, and, you know, I mean, I don't own a car, don't own a computer, have a landline phone, I don't own a cell phone, and it's wonderful. I'm wondering if you could comment on, or your personal experience. It seemed like pre-technological communities, pre-agricultural communities had two traditions. They had martial arts and hands-on healing. These were traditions that they passed on generation by generation, family by family. And I wonder if you could comment on that or if you had any personal experience with that.
Oh, I'm just really glad you brought it up, Michael. That's among the things we've lost. I think that's a really good, a couple of really good examples. Yeah, of development, not the usual meaning of development, but yeah, that a lot of elegant things that had been worked out, and you know, and now they're kind of, where have they gone?
First time caller, David in South Carolina. If you're there, come most presently upon your hour.
Hey, John, I appreciate you taking my call this evening.
No worries.
Normally, I'm just content to sit and listen, but this is one of those topics that really comes near and dear. You know, I about 2 years ago, I really started looking at what was going on with, you know, so-called modern society, if you will. You know, anyone who doesn't see what's going on with the financial and the technological stuff and the population crisis that we're running into and whatnot is really just too blind to see. But I started to ask myself, you know, what can I do to fix myself, if you will, so that if, or should I say when, something happens, that I'm a little bit better prepared. The conclusion that I came to, I ended up doing a week-long primitive skills survival course.
Oh.
And it was spiritual. I mean, whenever the only things you have to worry about are water, fire, shelter, food, it really makes your life simple.
Mm.
For probably the last, well, of course, you know, the first two or three nights are a little bit awkward because you don't have those four elements. But after about the third or fourth night, I noticed that I was sleeping better. I was sleeping more comfortable, even though we were sleeping in leaves and sticks, you know, absolute bliss, you know. But anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there. And like I said, fantastic program. You guys just keep up the great work, okay?
Jeez, wow, thank you.
Thanks for the call. Well, that was all right, wasn't it?
You know, I've heard the same thing, and it's time for me to get moving more in that direction myself, that people feel empowered when they do that, when they do recover some of these, reclaim some of these earth skills or whatever you want to call them. I've really gotten a strong hit from people on that. I think it's so important.
All right, let's see here. We have Mary in Arkansas on Wild One. Are you there, Mary?
Hello. Yes,
hi there.
I am.
Good.
Hi.
Welcome, hello. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi, John. I'm a former Eugenian, so I love Eugene. They're so socially conscious and progressive. I miss it so much.
Oh, what are you doing down in Arkansas?
Oh, it's where I grew up. I came back to do healing, fundamental deep stuff, which I think is at the basis of healing your own inner problems and violence and with your family of origin.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Been kind of hard to get back out.
Gee, oh, key work.
But, boy, what a lesson in difference in places. You know, I do think there's things in the water, certain places. And I didn't call for this reason, but I wanted to put in my two cents about Occupy after hearing you guys talk, because it's far from over. I just saw a picture a friend put up on the Internet of several places, miles of people. And it's incredible, the energy that generates. And it is a form of moving forward and love. And I don't know if you heard about Iceland, but they completely replaced their government.
Mm-hmm.
It's so incredible. And they chose not to pay back this debt to the World Bank because they said you were crooks. I mean, it was all wonderful, and they did it peacefully. I think Occupy is doing wonders. I think it's just picking up on this incredible energy that is people are waking up. And I know it's difficult because I know there's a real fight there.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear you have such a positive take on that.
Oh, I just feel it. The minute I heard about it, I can just feel it, you know. And that's what I really called about is the woman and the woman's direction and wisdom, which has been left out of our culture. And I think that's one reason why everything's run amok.
Yeah.
Because patriarchy started with men deciding that women needed to be subservient, and that they're just because they gave birth and were creating and had wisdom and all that, you know, shut up and let us see how we can do taking over, and it's been a disaster.
Well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Rape and torture and everything else, and so I wanted to point out that there are, if people know about the ancient goddess culture, where they lived for thousands of years peacefully.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the feminine was respected because women naturally are communal. And, you know, the communities were honored, and the earth and everything, like the indigenous people, like you were saying. The relationship we have with everything, Omitakwiasi, all my relations.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much for calling. We're going to have to pull the plug on you. You know why?
Important to say that.
Well, it is.
Oh, are we out of
Sorry
time?
About the pulling the plug part, but it's true.
Oh.
We're completely out of time, but thanks very much for a really spirited chat. And
thank you, John.
I don't think it'll be 10 years before we talk again. John Zerzan.
Hope not. Okay, take care.
JohnZerzan.net. Well, I don't know about you, but I want technology. I want it to advance, but I want it to be used to enhance life, not take it. And remember, the collective consciousness itself is an authority. But the question is, which consciousness? Till next Saturday night and beyond, be well.